This week on Potlatch, a look at the Fairbanks Native Association Project Now. This is Jeff Kennedy, and we're having two instructors of Project Now in Fairbanks and four students involved in the programming. Mary Beth Smetzer is a journalism instructor in Project Now. Howard Ringley is the acting director of Project Now. Also, Margie Dirks, Bob Dirks, Bernadette Clark, and Paula LaBarbera. Let's start with Howard Ringley telling us about the goals of Project Now.
Okay, well, basically, Project Now is an alternative education program sponsored by the Fairbanks Native Association. It's funded through the Johnson O'Malley Supplementary Education Funds through the BIA. And Project Now provides classes in communications areas that will give Alaska Native students some supplementary education and the possibility of entering the job market with a little bit advanced training and the possibility of getting a job in the state that would be meaningful.
When you talk about alternative education, you're talking about alternatives to what?
Alternatives to the standard 35-to-1 student-teacher ratio in the borough school district. The students work with instructors on a 1-to-1 basis, and it provides a very successful way of getting these subjects across. These are also subjects that the students wouldn't normally receive in the high school.
And let's enumerate these subjects.
Okay. The project has five components, and those are TV, video, photography, art, native culture, and journalism.
Why are you teaching TV, video, instead of having a school district do it?
The school district up at this point hasn't displayed any interest. The direction of the Fairbanks North Star Borough School District has been traditionally toward the basic education, and they sort of avoid the frills, as they call them. TV video is especially important because it's becoming more and more important in the culture, and it would provide the native student with a way of interpreting his culture and disseminating it. Providing a cultural synthesis with the dominant culture and the minority culture.
Let's break that down a little bit. Cultural synthesis.
What
does that mean?
We're providing kids. The state of Alaska is a large place, and it's rapidly industrializing. And I think we're providing students with a way of retaining the good, solid, valuable things in their culture and ways of interpreting them to 20th century American culture, and integrating themselves as they want to integrate on their own terms. And that's the synthesis I'm talking about.
Now, Mary Beth Smetzer, as a journalism instructor for Project Now, what do you do differently from a journalism instructor in, say, the Fairbanks North Star Borough Schools or the Anchorage Borough Schools or any place in Alaska? What is the difference?
Well, first of all, the class size is the most startling difference. My journalism classes are very small. I have the opportunity to really get to know my students and work with them. I see their strong points and their weak points and can work with them on an individual basis in these areas. We also have the good fortune to have a monthly publication at the Native Center called the River Times, and my students are directly involved in all aspects of putting out this newspaper and contributing to it, pasting it up, sending it out. Everybody in the whole project gets to help with the labeling and the mailing. So I think that those would be the very basic differences than if they were in a class of 30 to 35 students over at Lathrop.
We'll hear more about Project Now after we hear from Joan Baez. Joan Baez, starting our musical selections. Let's talk to some of the students who are involved in this program. We really make it work because they're the clients. Bob Dirks, you're involved in video, you've told me. What kinds of activities are you doing in video class? You operate a camera? What else?
Camera, the VTR.
Okay, what's a VTR?
Videotape recorder, and audio part of the video.
Do you get in front of a camera sometimes?
Yeah, sometimes you do.
And in front of a microphone. So this would be second nature to you now. This is even easier. We're only on radio. So you're actually operating some of the machinery and getting your hands on this. What do you think the advantage of learning this is for you and for other people?
Mm-hmm. It'll help me in my job career.
Which is going to be what?
Well, if I can, you know, working up in a video station and maybe even a television station.
What would you like to be doing there? Would you like to be in front of the camera, behind the camera, or operating the controls?
The controls.
You'd like to be the director, the number one person. Mm-hmm. Where are you from, Bob, and what were your parents? What ethnic group are you?
Well, my parents are, my dad is Aleut, my mom, she's Eskimo, and I was born in the Aleutian Islands, and I've been living up in Fairbanks most of my life.
Do you remember anything from the Aleutian Islands?
No, they took me out about a year, when I was about a year old.
So you don't remember. That'd be fascinating to hear, about your remembrances of the Aleutian Islands. Now, we're also going to be talking to Margie. And you're wearing some jewelry. Why don't you tell us about what you're wearing and describe it and how you got to make it?
It's a copper necklace, and it's on a string of wire across the neck, and I made this thing that hangs down from it. It's also made out of copper, and you cut the copper out, and you file it down and sand it, and you go over it with the buffers, then you polish it.
And what is the design? Why don't you describe the design for us?
I got my initials on it.
What else are you learning in jewelry classes? Or is this anything you find practical?
We're going to work in silver pretty soon. And we've been working with feathers and making necklaces and bracelets and a whole bunch of jewelry.
Now, you are also in video, so I'll ask you and your brother Bob this question. What is the material that you're videotaping? Are you just playing around with this, or are you producing something for somebody in your videotape presentations? You're just interviewing each other?
Yeah, just the same, beginning. Except we do, little skits and get to know the equipment a lot better.
The students right now are just working on interviewing each other and practicing the techniques of using the cameras and equipment. And within the next couple of months, we have the Doyon Stockholders Meeting, the Tanana Chiefs Conference Meeting, the Fairbanks Native Association meeting, the annual meetings, as well as the Nulato Stick Dance and the Fairbanks Native Association Potlatch. And the students will be at all of these activities, taping them and doing some presentations. Students also last semester taped a Native dance class that we had, that we offered at Project Now, and we have tapes of that. And we're also we have a basket maker, one of the last birch bark basket makers in the interior, who is going to come down, and we're going to tape her making baskets. We already have still photographs of her gathering the roots and the bark that are necessary, and we're going to tape the actual making of the baskets. And the student right now, like most of Project Now, students are practicing their communication skills and getting a little more confidence with themselves and with the equipment so that they can go out into the public arena and do this kind of work. And the Project Now video classes, we've succeeded right now in placing one of our video students in one of the downtown TV studios as an intern.
Which television station is that?
Channel 11, KFAR, I believe it is. KFRB, excuse me.
It's called KTVF, Northern Television in Fairbanks. Let's hear a program that was put together by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and I'd like our listeners to comment on the program. After all, it was put out by the Bureau of Indian Affairs, and they're going to give a lot of material that's favorable to their organization. They're interested in what listeners have to say about what they're doing for this radio program. Here now is a tape from the Bureau of Indian Affairs.
When President Ford submitted his budget to Congress in January, it contained a $589 million request to operate Indian programs in the Bureau of Indian Affairs. This was a $19 million increase over fiscal year 1976, says Morris Thompson, Commissioner of Indian Affairs.
The 1977 fiscal year budget includes some new items, some items expanded, a general increase in monies to service the Indian community. The biggest increase, of course, is about $32 million to implement the self-determination law, which we've worked very hard on.
The commissioner says there will be some increases in education, housing, and road programs, but basically, due to inflation, there will be no great expansion of old programs nor development of new ones. The Indian Self-Determination Act, which is designed to strengthen tribal governments and give Indian communities control over reservation programs, has received special attention in the budget request, says Commissioner Thompson, because getting new legislation into operation is sometimes difficult and costly. Funds are needed to offer technical assistance and to meet tribal overhead costs for contracted programs. This, he says, is absolutely essential for carrying out the administration's Indian policy and making Indian self-determination a reality. Alaska Natives have been given a second chance to enroll under the Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act. Some 2,000 people were locked out of benefits under the act when they failed to get their applications in before the March 1973 cutoff date. But new legislation passed earlier this year reopens the rolls for Alaskan Indians, Eskimos, or Aleuts with 1/4 degree blood or more who missed the first go-around. When the first roll was taken several years ago, many Natives were out of state and did not hear about the enrollment procedure. The Settlement Act, which was signed into law by President Nixon on December 18, 1971, granted Alaska Natives 4 million acres of land and close to $1 billion. Indian reservations in America sit on top of a great percentage of the nation's coal reserves, and the development or non-development of these resources is a major concern to Indians and non-Indians alike. Some tribes are actively pursuing large-scale development of coal and gas. Some are in the planning stages, and some, like the Northern Cheyenne and Montana, want nothing to do with any of it. Tribal Councilman Ray Spang explains why his tribe is opposed to tapping the coal reserves beneath their reservation.
Ours Northern Cheyenne stance is that we flat don't want development, period. And other tribes are saying, well, maybe we'll do a study and see how much we want. Then other tribes are already in production stages where they're getting prices that were sealed inside those contracts, say, 10, 15 years ago, and they're unrealistic, you know, in today's world. The oil and gas companies and big government, or the federal government, and state governments, I suppose, those three are, I would suppose, pressuring the Northern Cheyenne and other tribes to develop those energies. You know, it's almost at a standoff where now there are people looking at Northern Cheyenne and saying that we're un-American because we won't strip mine our reservation and let you have that 15 billion tons of coal under there. Okay. And the only thing that we're interested in is keeping that land base so we can keep the language and so we can keep the tribe.
Most Native Americans have mixed feelings about the bicentennial, but Philip Deer, a Creek medicine man and spiritual leader for the American Indian Movement, recently told an audience at the University of Minnesota that he cannot celebrate until he has the same freedom the white man was looking for when the white man landed in this country. Deer explained that, quote, "When I talk about being free, I don't mean freedom to go in bars or stay in fancy hotels. I mean the freedom to raise my children in the Indian way, the freedom to practice my religion." Bicentennial continues to be a controversial subject among the Native American population. This is Tana Beebe for Indian Network News, a bi-monthly broadcast sponsored by the Bureau of Indian Affairs in cooperation with this station.
Now we hear more music, this time Peter LaFarge.
I'm an Indian, I'm an alien. I'm a stranger in your town. All your white men's roads lead upward, all the Indians lead him down. And the dark fields flow around me, the shadows thick as snow. But I've got to keep on singing, for the road knows where I go. For there's got to be somebody, Indian or not, to be singing on the dark road to open up the lock. And you can fill up all your prisons, lock and bar the door. But for every one you lock up, there'll be 1,000 more. For the red man and the black man, the yellow, white and brown, we walk this road together, and this road is freedom bound.
Peter Lafarge for you, and we'll go back now to two of our students from the Fairbanks Native Association, Project Now, and we're just reminded of ethnic groups there, with Peter Lafarge saying he's an Indian. What is your ethnic background, Bernadette Clark? You were born in Germany, but what were your parents?
My mom's Eskimo, and my dad's a tiny bit of Blackfoot, the rest white.
And what were you doing in Germany, besides being born?
My dad was in the Army, and I lived there until I was about 6 or 7.
And your mom was Eskimo?
She's Eskimo.
She is Eskimo, and where was she born?
Nome.
And where was your grandmother born on your mother's side? You were telling us before, but you didn't want to tell us now.
I don't know for sure.
Okay, well, take a guess. Where do you think she was born?
Little Diomede.
Now, you're taking photography courses.
Yeah.
What are these what are you going to be taking pictures of? Are you going to be working with Mrs. Smetzer's class in River Times? Are you going to be taking pictures for the River Times later?
We just take pictures, and then, if she likes a couple, she'll tell us, and then she'll put it in the paper. And if we do that, then we get extra credit.
Are you going to be taking pictures of some native activities around Fairbanks, or are you going to be just taking pictures of whatever you'd like?
Oh, we'll probably be taking pictures of them, activities. When we went to Anchorage, we took pictures of the Anchorage trip. And if we go to Juneau, we probably will take some there, too.
And tell us about your trip in Anchorage. Where did you go? And what was the purpose of your trip?
We went there for a meeting, and it was in the Captain Cook Hotel. It was a couple months ago.
What was the meeting about?
It was the AFN convention in Anchorage. We sent students from the video component and the photography and Native culture and art, 2 students each, down to see the convention. The video students were supposed to tape the convention, but there was some confusion there, and the people in AFN didn't have it together, so the students didn't tape the convention, but they did go to the banquet and participate in some of the activities there.
What are some of the trips coming up in the future for the project now?
We are supposed to go out to Nolato for the stick dance, although I don't know if we're going to be able to do that. The one trip we do have definitely planned is a trip to Juneau and then possibly to Sitka, but definitely Juneau, and then come back through Carrickross and Whitehorse, visit the village in Carrickross in the Yukon Territory. The Juneau trip would be to go down near the end of the semester and see the legislature. We went down last year, watched the legislature for half a day, and then visited with the governor for an hour or so. He was very kind to give us the time, and Mrs. Hammond took us through the governor's mansion and the like. And I think the kids learned quite a bit about the operation of state government. Project Now, we have not had as much travel this year as we would like, but we do try and do a lot of travel, as we find that it's probably worth more than the classroom instruction.
How many students are now enrolled in Project Now?
Right now we have 45, or no, excuse me, 49. There were 45 last semester. And the breakdown, there's, I think, 13 Eskimo students, or Eskimo-Aleut mixtures, and the rest are interior Athabascan students.
Including Paula LaBarbera, who has a Italian surname. How did you get that?
My dad's Italian.
And what's your mom?
Well, my mom was Athabascan.
And you were born where? In Fairbanks?
In Anchorage.
In Anchorage. Can you tell us a little bit about the bead and skin sewing class? Are you learning Athabascan ways?
Well, I don't know really what kind of ways they are, but like, she tells us, she has a list of things that we can make. Like, I'm making a medallion right now. I've almost got it finished. I've got to put the outer rim on it and the neck part, I guess. I don't know. And I don't know, she has a list of things that you can make, like hair barrettes and things.
And a music break now with Tom Rush. Tom Rush for you, singing about Mother Earth. One of the events that I think the Fairbanks Native Association Project Now students will be involved with will be something coming up on the University of Alaska Fairbanks campus, March 15th through the 19th, and this is the Festival of Native Arts. And the first night is scheduled Inupiaq Eskimo Night, that is the 15th of March, and that's a Monday night. Tuesday night will be Aleut night, and we know that Margie and Bob will be interested in that. That will be held in the theater of the Fine Arts Building on the University of Alaska campus. And then Wednesday night, Yupik Eskimo night. And the Thursday night will be Athabascan night. And then Friday night will be the Simsiyan, the Haida, and the Tlingits on the Festival of Native Arts, March 15th through 19th on the University of Alaska Fairbanks campus. Our thanks very much to our guests, Mary Beth Smetzer, Howard Ringley, Margie Dirks and Bob Dirks, Bernadette Clark, and Paula LaBarbera. This is Jeff Kennedy. Thank you for listening. Potlatch is produced by KUAC under Title I of the Higher Education Act.